This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to Referee's World. My name is Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with the Somerset FA. And my partner in crime is PGMOL assessor and Somerset FA's county training officer, Richard Mellon. In this episode, Rich has an in-depth conversation with FA qualified physio of treatment and management of sports injuries, Dave Callow, about the importance of personal prep for a game. Dave played football at senior county level before moving into the medical side of the game and doing his time at Bristol City, currently at Weston-super-Mare. There's some really interesting stuff coming up in the next 40 minutes, including the importance of a good diet, training, types of injuries for both players and referees, and how to treat them, and a few things you probably do and take for granted without realising the negative effects. By that, I mean high caffeine drinks and injury sprays. The conversation starts with Dave's advice to new referees.
This is Referee's World.
Listen online at refereesworld.co.uk
or search iTunes for Referee's World.
Young referees, it comes down to their commitment and what they want out of refereeing, what they want out of life, how successful they want to be. And you've got to have a little bit of something under the left side to be able to do it without spelling little three-letter words. Conviction to go out and train to what your body will let you. Everybody is different shape and size, tall, short, thin, and a little bit overweight. So you need to train to what your body will allow you. And if you look at football refereeing these days, you have to be an athlete above all. So if your body doesn't allow you to be an athlete as part of your success, then you will referee very well at, say, county level and not necessarily get into football league. So you have to be an athlete and you have to train as an athlete to be able to succeed, assuming that you're very good on the refereeing side, the rules, man management, everything else. So it's about fitness, stamina and your food and drink.
Let's just touch on food and drink then, Dave. Go back to when you were a lad. You'd get home with a Saturday lunchtime, having done a bit of work, maybe a paper round or whatever it might have been, and a little bit more working on the farm. You'd have been told to have some lunch before you go and referee in the afternoon. What would have been the problems incurred with that, and what would be looking for today's referees?
Well, I would have been the same as anybody else because it was a 5.5 day week then. So you worked a Saturday morning, you came home from work, and I was working on the farm, and you came home from work. My mother worked, so Gran did the cooking, and she just basically said, you can't work and go and play sport on an empty stomach.
Okay, that's
so she
comment,
did the stew and the doughboys, middle of winter, soup with it sometimes. So you went off to catch the bus. I used to cycle 3 miles to from where I lived to catch the bus for football or to the ground. So hopefully that did me a bit of favour by getting rid of some of the dinner. But that was it then. You built up some good food to be able to play hard. But I was the same as everybody. That was just it. We didn't eat to play sport. We ate because we needed to.
The whole psychology of it now, though, Dave, has changed dramatically, hasn't it? As regards sort of healthy living styles, help yourself perform to the best standards possible. For a young referee or a new referee, not just the young referees, sorry to those colleagues that are coming into football refereeing in the late 30s and 40s, but what sort of preparation as regards eating before a game? If, say, we've got a 3 o'clock kickoff or during the winter months it's a 2 o'clock kickoff, what sort of timings would you expect for, what can I say, comfortable running around and not eating too late before kickoff?
Yeah, a lot depends on your day-to-day job. We all work and then we go off to our sport. So if you've got a heavy job, you need to put food in, the calories in, to survive. And somebody in an office would eat slightly differently. So when it comes to the Saturday, we really say the 24 hours before is your final preparation.
24 hours before
24 hours.
Okay.
You're drinking enough fluid over the 24 hours to build up the fluid in the body.
And what sort of levels of fluid will we be expected to drink, Dave? Two litres?
We're talking somewhere around about the 2 litres plus. Depends if it's summer.
Yeah.
Might be 6 litres. winter now, 3 litres.
Right.
But you're spreading it over the 24 hours, what we call grazing. Farmer allows his cattle to graze steadily across the field. He doesn't allow them straight into the whole green field.
Yeah.
He puts the wire fence and they go steadily over 24 hours.
Good piece of advice. We wouldn't want a referee going out there sort of like drinking a 2 litre bottle of water an hour before kickoff. It just, that would have not have the required effect, would it?
No, it's just open up the bladder.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying it's, like you say, it's grazing for referees as it would be for players, and obviously you're looking after players. But previous 24 hours, when would be a reasonable time to have something before a match on a, say, local league's football?
Good early breakfast, and then you would basically say 2 to 3 hours before. You don't really want the digestion system to be still holding food in the stomach. Once you start running, you don't digest food.
So if we identify this, then what you're saying is top athletes don't perform with food in the stomach?
No.
Okay, that's interesting.
It will just stay there. As soon as you start running, then the stomach doesn't digest. So what is there undigested will stay undigested, basically.
So
I'm not a chemist.
So Saturday morning, Sunday morning football, we're talking about a full English breakfast?
Well, really cereal, milk, and you wouldn't go for a heavy fry-up.
No, toast.
And then toast and then lunchtime, you're back with your beans on toast, egg on toast.
Yeah.
So something light, but something good.
Okay.
And during the week, you're building up with your pastas, your carbohydrates and everything else.
And for those referees that like their pint of ale?
Basically, we would say no alcohol 24 hours, 48 if possible, hours before a game. And also, for every pint of beer you drink, you should match it with an extra pint of water.
So 1 pint of beer to 2 pints of water.
To put the body back a little bit level.
Wow. Okay. Thanks for that, Dave. Right. Okay. So that's a little bit on food and drink. And I know we've talked about this on Referees World podcast before, as regards food and drink, but hearing it from a qualified person who looks after players week in, week out with his football club, and you're currently with Western Supermare Football Club, Dave, aren't you?
Yes, in the third season with Western.
Third season with Western Supermare. Fourth season at Western Supermare. And Western Supermare are in the Southern Conference, aren't they?
Yes.
Southern Conference. Yes. So they're having a fairly good season just outside the playoffs. Okay. So with our referees looking after themselves, let's talk a little bit about looking after their own body. We talked about the food and drink. What about the fitness regimes, Dave?
Fitness, as I said, will depend on age and how they look after their body. But they need to do fitness. They need stamina to go the full 90. And the higher level they go, the more they will need for the 490. But initially, fitness, it will depend on their job as to the type of fitness they will want. If you work hard all day, you will want lighter training than if you're in an office when you can actually go out and blast it at night, because your body's rested a little bit more during the day than somebody, say, on a building site digging a trench.
Yeah.
So your job has to balance up your fitness. The one bit people do forget is rest. You do need to work in rest to allow the body to recover. So depending on your work type and your training schedule as to how you can put the rest back in. Stamina, you build up pre-season training. Our manager loves to use Brian Down. Anybody knows the 216 steps up and down Brian Down in the fort at the end? And that's part of our first week pre-season training, stamina. And at the end of the day, a footballer or a referee, I've mentioned athlete earlier, but if they aren't prepared to run, then don't attempt the sport, because the higher you get, the more you run.
Dave, we mentioned about stamina, and I know we've just touched on food and drink. Now, stamina is created through a number of things, and we briefly mentioned about fitness. Fitness is an important part for referees. What creates stamina through muscles? How do we feed our muscles?
Well, I think good healthy food, if you read all the papers, the magazines, 1 minute wine is good for your heart, another minute it isn't, another time fruit is good for this and fruit is bad for something else. What we really say is everything in moderation. So any good balanced diet, fruit, veg, potatoes, meat, fish, we always think of chicken as well, as a meat with light meat for sport, but everything in moderation is not a bad diet.
Okay.
And then you will boost it like marathon runners would, etc. You would boost up your carbohydrates leading up to your sporting activity.
Yeah. So we're going to feed up before a game, a few hours before. We'll have chicken, beans and things like that. What about the little snacks? What about these, the Jaffa cakes, the jelly beans, the jelly babies situation? What's your view on that? And of course, Mars bars and chocolate, that type of thing.
Yeah, the little snacks. I mean, you see in the dressing rooms these days, jelly babies and Jaffa cakes, anything, jelly itself, anything which is easily absorbed, the sugar content.
What about bananas, Dave?
Bananas, again, are easily digested. So
okay.
When we talked about eating a couple hours before, then bananas are something which is easily digested. But at the end of the day, if you have a good balanced diet come match day, then you eat the jelly babies for enjoyment. Because you should have enough sugar already there.
Yeah.
The last minute stuff doesn't really, it helps with the mindset and makes you feel happy and prepared, but the body should already have enough.
And I'd just like to remind my colleagues listening to the Referees World podcast on this occasion, within moderation, and I wouldn't recommend a glass of red wine 5 minutes before kickoff. Leave the red wine to we more mature assessors that sit in the stand. You are the referees, you get out there and do the stuff, and then you can have a red wine or a beer after the game. Okay, Dave, what about other things that you've got there for us to discuss as regards referee prep and looking after himself?
Looking after, you just mentioned enjoying a pint after a game. Not if you're injured. No alcohol.
Okay.
Alcohol doesn't help the body to recover. So therefore, if you do pull a muscle during a game, although we love to have a drink afterwards, a pint and go out Saturday night, really, you should have no alcohol, particularly if you're just going through a small injury which might affect whether you go out again on midweek, Tuesday, Wednesday, you will struggle. So really no alcohol on an injury.
What's in your view? I mean, I know you've got a couple of thoughts about referee or assistant referee movement, and the typical injury that a referee might get is generally a calf injury. And like I say, I remember you treating me for a calf injury when I came off of a game. I thought I was never going to referee again, but within 2 weeks you had me up and running, and now I was doing another game. But what's the do's and don'ts with an injury then, Dave? Let's talk about the calf strain for an example.
If you happen to pull a calf muscle, or you've got a tight calf during a game or over two or three games, then basically the first 3 days after an injury, it's cold treatment, ice, cold bucket, cold shower, sit on the side of the bath and hit your calf muscles, your lower body with cold water, but it's cold for 3 days. No deep heat rubs, and also painkillers if you needed them, then something like paracetamol, not anti-inflammatories for 3 days. You should start anti-inflammatories after 3 days once the injury is settled to get rid of the excess fluid.
Yeah. I recall, if I use my personal experience, about when I came off the game just before half time, I was sat there in the change room quite dejected, and in come the lads, and the referee on this occasion asked how I was, and he made me eat before we did anything about treatment or taking in anti-inflammatories. He made me eat sandwiches. What was behind that, Dave?
Anti-inflammatories can upset the stomach.
Okay.
So you need to take those with food in your stomach. Just depends on what you eat and how and when, I suppose. Not too sure on that one in that circumstance. But it would be really putting food back in the body after exercise.
Yeah. I also remember when I got home with the injury that I personally had, and it was a calf strain, that I jumped straight in the bath. And that was probably the worst thing I could have done, I understand. And having spoken to you after that, I realised it was an error. And I think that's quite common with all grassroots people. They think they get an injury, jump in the bath, and it'll ease the muscle back into sort of some sort of rehab or help itself to recover. But that's not true. You're saying about cold and
no,
ice.
No, it's just the old way. You always had a warm bath, hot bath after the excess of using your muscles. People used to think of hot baths but it's code bars. In the old Victorian days, Knightstone, those who remember it in Weston, would have had brine bars, cold seawater bars. They didn't realise how good it was doing them. Right. It was just something the Victorians did. But we're doing that now. We have cold bars if need do. After a game, we've got a wheelie bin in the shower full up with cold water and ice. So if people have got an injury, particularly football lower body, they will go in a cold wheelie bin full of water and ice rather than the hot shower.
And the cold water impact, it's helping the circulation. Am I right in describing that?
It closes down the fluid, the bleeding within the muscle itself, whatever type of fluid is from the tear, from the over exertion, then it stops the bleeding, so it therefore stops the swelling, and the chemicals within the body start to turn around and say, oh, we should be rehabbing. Helps get rid of the lactics as well. But on the fitness, going back to that pre-match and post-match, then the big mistake a lot of people make is that they go and warm up, and early part of the warm up they will start stretching muscles. You should not stretch a cold muscle. At the end of your warm up, your muscle might be warm enough to stretch.
So, okay, let's go through a pre-match prep then, Dave. Players, equally as referees, will do a little bit of jogging, a little bit of low intensity running, building up to sort of creating. Heart rate and everything else like that. What would you be your recommendation for a period before a game?
There's two things. One, as you said, you're warming up the muscles and you're working the heart, cardiovascular. You don't need to go out and warm up too early, or the final warm up, because if you come into the dressing room too early, you've lost all the benefit of it, other than just what the brain enjoys. To get you mentally aware of what you're going to be doing, but once you've sat down for a quarter of an hour, you've lost the main benefit of the cardiovascular and warming up the muscles, and you'd have to start again.
So it's basically don't go out too early, otherwise you use the benefit of having warmed up, and then you start getting cold.
And then 10 minutes before the game, get changed, fresh shirt, and get back out and perform.
What about half time, Dave? What would be a referee? He's just had a stonking good first 45 minutes up there and really enjoying the game. Comes off at half time, doesn't really want to have half time, but you know, we do need it. How would referee sort of try to retain his momentum?
We very often say half time does nobody any favours, particularly these days. They are now quarter of an hour instead of the 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The 10 minutes was better than quarter of an hour. So during that quarter of an hour, your body eases up, the muscles get cooler, and the flexibility, if you like, starts to, your muscles tighten up a little bit. So basically, it's just light movement around the referee's room. They're not that big, but you can still do what we would basically say is the belly dancer, a bit of ballistic movement, just letting the leg as a pendulum just generally ease it forwards, back, sides, in front, behind, and just sink of your leg as a pendulum, because the muscle is then naturally stretching, shortening, stretching, shortening. You don't need a lot of static stretching, but don't sit down for too long, and just generally move about lightly. And when you go back out, really, you should do a couple little runs, jogs, just to get the body going again.
Yeah. And what sort of fluids at halftime, Dave? What are we talking about? A pint of squash?
Maximum, because otherwise you'll only want to go to the loo. It's just, again, grazing. Instead of gulping it down, it's just slowly sipping it during the halftime break.
Yeah, slow sipping. That's a big message there, rather than gulping it, as you say.
Yeah.
Okay. And post-match, Dave, what about referees looking after himself after the game? He's had a good 90 minutes run around. The calves are feeling tight. The body's feeling a little bit exhausted. What sort of recovery might he consider?
Well, recovery-wise, after a game, the referee stays and watches the players off the park, or if the manager keeps them out there to start cooling down straight away. But he very rarely does a cool-off out on the field. He goes back to his dressing room. So again, you've got to treat it as a small area, but what can you do in that area? You can do, at that stage, just very basic, simple static stretching if you wanted. Although the muscles are tired, but they're warm, and they will stretch more after the game in preparation for the next one than they will before a game or at half time. And again, it's no problem to put a hand on the wall for balance and do some ballistic stretching, some pendulum stretching. So any natural, easy flowing movement Lengthening the muscles, shortening the muscles is the first bit of preparation for the next game, helping to get rid of the laptics.
Yeah, because some of our referees will be refereeing Saturday afternoon and Sunday mornings or Sunday afternoon. So, you know, the laptics, that creates a little bit of stiffness in the muscles. Mm. What sort of things can a referee do to help release the laptics building up?
I always say to my players, those who want to of a Sunday morning, go and walk the dog or the neighbour's dog and take a 2-litre bottle of water with them. In Bristol City days, I quoted Bristol City earlier on, then one of the players always came up to the academy ground on a Sunday morning and he just walked around watching all the games, walking, sipping. And that was his way of getting rid of Saturday, preparing for Monday back in training. Mm. He always did his Sunday morning light exercise.
So that's just literally relaxing in the most basic sense, isn't it?
Yeah.
But obviously looking after yourself. Yeah. Okay, this is Richard Mellin and this is Referees World Podcast, talking to Dave Callow about treatment and management of injuries. For referees, it's no different from players getting sustaining injuries. So we need to think about how we look after ourselves. We've talked a little bit about diet, nutrition, a little bit of fitness, looking after ourselves if we sustain injuries or we need a little bit of a recovery session. Let's go on to the field of play now, Dave, and see how our referees can possibly help players, because quite often a referee will be seen as the only person at grassroots level as anybody that might have a little bit of idea of how to treat a player's injury. So basic injuries, again, for players, twisted knees, ankles, collisions and all sorts of things like that. Let's go to sort of straight in at the deep end and let's talk about a player who sustains a head injury, clash of heads.
Yeah, always the worst and sometimes the hardest to make a decision. Does the player stay on? If a player has a clash of heads and is conscious, then it's the assessment of the person on the side. Always you say the old-fashioned bucket man, the modern sports therapist. He's coming onto the pitch and making a decision where that player is okay after a head injury. As a referee, if the decision is made by the club that he's going to play on, then you might be just a little bit aware of that player. Does he change in any way his attitude? Quiet player, does he get angry? Angry player, does he get very quiet? Is he aware where he is on the field of play? Somebody who's making good clean tackles, is he suddenly becoming cumbersome? Because it all means then that the brain inside the old skull has had a little rattle,
yeah,
and he's got a bit of concussion coming on.
So the thing that we have with referees, Dave, some quite often is that the man that comes on with the bucket might be a playing substitute and just gets the sponge out and just slaps it around the face and, you know, everywhere else without any real effect. How might a referee sort of make an assessment of this situation?
The referee's vulnerable in the situation that everybody looks to the man in black. He's in charge. What does he know or doesn't know? But with head injuries, you just do not know for sure exactly what it is. As a referee, it's not your responsibility to say whether a player can play on or not in that situation. Unless you've got other training, you would only make a decision within your own qualifications, in your own training. And what we would say is be safe with any decision you make, because you don't want problems for that player, and that's why I say that if anybody has had a head knock but in plays on, you're just conscious and you're watching them, you're aware of any changes, and that is really the only indication you're going to get is any changes in his character, the way he's playing, etc. A lot of people will go through the game with no problem at all after a slight head knock.
Very, very briefly talking about it, I hear the word that you use there is just remain safe and don't take a gamble. A player's gone down having made a head injury. The referee's under pressure from people to have him removed from the field of play. If the referee's got any doubt, then he shouldn't take a risk and have the player moved. If he's motionless, but he is conscious.
Yeah, if there's two ways, obviously. One, he's breathing and he's conscious and he's aware of what's happening, although he might be a bit fuzzy, say, is a simple way of saying it. Or else If he's unconscious and breathing, then the obvious is there. He's not going to be moved.
Yeah.
And the paramedics are called straight up front, and you're looking after him until that situation, making sure that he's breathing. But anybody who's had a knock and is conscious, you're taking note of what you see. Are they normal? Are they natural? Anything which isn't normal, any natural, then you suspect there is a problem. And as long as you play within your own training as a referee, and not many referees possibly do go into extra medical training, there's no necessary for them to do it, but as long as you play safe and do the sensible practical thing, you're not going to jump in at the deep end and have problems.
We went straight in at the deep end there and talked about a head injury. Let's just briefly talk about blood injuries. And everybody knows about the situation about a player's kit has to be replaced, this, that and the other, which arguably is the right decision or the wrong decision. But if FIFA make the rules, then referees have to apply them. What's the issues relating to cuts and bumps and that, Dave?
If the young players have never heard about Terry Butcher, they ought to Google it and see his pictures in an England game.
Yeah.
That was a little bit horrendous, the colour of his shirt at the end. But basically the fear originally was somebody catching AIDS. When that blew into a massive problem, you were more likely to catch hepatitis from somebody's blood, an injury, than you are AIDS in a sporting situation.
Okay.
Very hard to catch AIDS. And as far as the blood on the shirt goes, particularly with HIV, once it's outside the body and loses its body temperature, the virus dies. It cannot survive outside the body. So that's why we say you're very cautious of sharps, cutting yourself on something sharp where there's blood, somebody else's blood, than hepatitis. So that is more of a problem to us, really, than HIV in a sporting situation. Major bleeds, then it is getting the compression, the sterile bandages on as soon as possible. Somebody who's severed an artery, femoral artery down through the upper leg, then it's spurting, and if they don't get treatment, they're going to be in trouble in 10 minutes or so as the body pumps the blood out.
Right.
Where if you're an old boy with varicose veins and they get sort of raked down the Achilles and opens up a varicose vein, it'll just ooze and it'll gush, and the body won't lose as much blood or as quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a little bit of time. But it's about getting the player down and get compression, sterile bandages on and raise it, wait for the paramedics. Minor bleeds they're going to play on with, and then as long as the sports injury person with them has cleaned them up, made it look clean and tidy and safe, then a lot of them will play on.
Okay.
The only difference I would say is youth football.
Then very difficult youth football.
Don't push the limits. They've got another weekend to play, off the field of play, and let somebody else go on his sub.
This is the Referee's World podcast.
Okay, that's head injuries, blood injuries. We're going to go into the more common things now. Players that sustain injuries. What about the player who takes the ball right in the midriff, Dave? I'll say in the stomach, but I also mean in the breadbasket, a bit lower than the stomach.
Help you give them is time. Man flu comes to mind. Most people would say it's not as bad as it seems, but from experience we all know it can be. Warmth, not cold, so you don't want the physio coming on and pouring cold down your shorts or over your stomach. You need warmth in those situations. The pain threshold depends on what that's like with an individual as to how quick they will move, but they need to get up off the floor and sort of bent knees, just a gently relaxed stomach body position, and slowly straighten up when they can, so that the body can start to get the blood back around the area naturally and help to get rid of the pain, the spasm which is going on.
Okay.
And as long as they got everything there, nothing has been damaged, then they'll be all right.
So let's just summarise that, because this is common areas now for player injuries. A player that gets hit with the ball right in the stomach or a little bit lower in the bread basket, as we call it, it's not the best thing for someone to come on and slap a sponge around the genitals or anywhere like that. It's not good. And the idea of getting him up and bending him in half is not a good idea as well, Dave. Am I right in saying that?
No, it gives him time to just get up, and settle. His breathing will be a little bit faster and lighter until he can gradually breathe steadily and normally. But it will be depending on how bad they've been hit as to how much time. And the referee's got to read the situation. Is it natural for somebody to be taking time, or is there a little bit of play acting?
This is Referee's World.
Listen online at refereesworld.co.uk
or search iTunes for Referee's World.
Okay, let's go into the areas in which part of the body becomes involved in making tackles. Ankles, knees and things like that, Dave. What sort of things would we come across, and how could we help that?
The initial thing, the old magic sponge, when you think of that, the body gets hurt, whether it's the shin, the muscle, whether it's a kick, external force, or whether it's a muscle, which is internal force, muscle gets ripped or the tendon ligaments get ripped, then it's going to be individually the player's pain threshold will depend how quickly they will move. Obviously the injury itself is to whether they're going to play on or not. But the magic sponge I mentioned just now, what did it do? It gave the brain something else to think about. Instead of the pain from the kick, the brain suddenly got a cold sensation. It had a different sensation.
Right.
And so it couldn't take both sensations, so it levelled them out. So the pain became less, and the cold helped the player as well, because the pain threshold dropped and they could start moving. So that was the old sponge bag, the cold water. And now when I go onto the field of play, I will use water, cold water, iced water, as part of my assessment. I am not treating, I'm helping to reduce the pain to see if the player will move the body
part. That's a good point there, Dave. I wanted to lead on to that, because I thought about that just a couple of moments ago, because a lot of people were saying that when a player's down and he's got an injury on the leg somewhere, the first thing that the assessment involves is cleaning it, to make an assessment of it. That's not treating it, is it? That's just cleaning it up so you can analyse the area of injury and see if there's any swelling, any abrasions, any cuts and things like that. Would that be fair to say that?
Yeah, you obviously go on the field of play, ask a player what he's done, and you're going to use your cold water to clean the area if you need to, and the cold water to reduce the pain.
Yeah.
And at that stage then, you will ask him, can he move it? And can he move it a bit more? So that you get the range of movement, which is equivalent to what he would use if he was up playing again.
And that is just part of the assessment. That's not part of the treatment, is it?
That's part of the assessment. Yeah. Any time a player says, I can't move it, I don't want to move it, then you do not force it.
Yeah.
He's off the field for more assessment, whether it's stretcher or whether it's carried off. And particularly with young players, you've got to remember they've all got a different pain threshold.
Okay, so we see this, I think it's called a freeze spray, isn't it? In white and blue cans, people come out, and when there's a muscle injury in the back, somebody gets out the tin of Ralgex or something like that. So you're saying that that's not necessarily good treatment. What would it potentially do, Dave?
Two things. The cold spray is a chemical, and it is designed to mask the pain from the injury. So therefore, if a player doesn't feel pain, he will get up and run on, like we used to say.
Mm-hmm.
So he might re-damage. Once the cold spray wears off within a couple of minutes, he could have been running on a strained muscle ligament, a strain or a sprain, I should say, muscle ligament, where cold water only lasts for 10 seconds or so. It doesn't prolong. And at the same stage, if anybody rubbed in heat sprays or heat ointments, then you're creating the wrong sort of sensation around the injury. You're increasing the heat into the injury, which is going to bleed into the muscle rather than closing down the muscle and stop any fluid, any bleeding.
Okay.
So heat will open it up. Yeah. You're looking to close it down.
Just want to step back a little bit, Dave, here. Let's go back to pre-match. And I know a lot of my colleagues listening, and I was guilty in my first early days as a referee, about spraying, putting Ralgex in, deep heat and rubbing all that sort of stuff in. What's the modern theme for personal preparation as regards preparing the body, the massaging the legs? What sort of bits and pieces and resources will be expected to use, Dave?
And basically, after a good warm-up, how much do you need? We use a massage oil with a little bit of wintergreen, very weak solution, just for a natural warming of the body. You can buy what we would call hot balm, which isn't very heavily mentholated stuff that you find in the dressing rooms at times. It has a smell, but it's really a massage oil. What you're looking for is invigorating the surface. Your warm-up has got the muscles warm, got the blood flowing. You're just looking to invigorate the surface of the legs.
Okay.
As much as anything, make the player feel comfortable going back out.
Part of the preparation for loads of players and referees of days gone by is to buy loads of deep heat, Raljex, whatever it is, rub it into the skin. But that was really superficial, wasn't it? It wasn't really doing anything for preparation.
No, and what it does, it turns the skin red.
Yes.
So therefore, that is blood on the surface when you actually want the blood in the muscles to keep the muscles warm.
Okay.
So you go and warm up, you rub Raljex or deep heat, something or other, into your legs, and you pull the blood away from the muscle.
Yeah.
So it's a detriment. And the other thing I forgot to say, just quickly going back to cold sprays, is careful you don't spray cold sprays onto socks, through socks, without taking it down to see if there's an open cut underneath. Otherwise, you're putting chemical into an open cut.
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Dave, we've talked about quite a few things on this podcast now, and before we come to the end, just want to cover a couple other things. What about strap-ins and things like that as regards helping in injury? Tubi grip, the rubber sleeves that we put on arms, elbows, ankles, knees and things like that. And then the other thing I want to come on to is we talked about fluids, and I know there's one or two fluids that may not help the body perform to the standards that we might try.
The tubi grips and strappings, you might use them for one or two games after injury. You shouldn't use them continuous, because you need to see a sports therapist and get the injury sorted out properly, so you don't have to use continuous strappings. Particularly younger players, our real old referee, if you like, we call him an old one, he might need putting together to go out and perform, but a young referee shouldn't need strappings. He needs proper treatment. My players will have one or two matches, light strappings after injury as a precaution. But if you imagine how much body power you put through joints, that no strapping lasts much more than 20 minutes into a game. So the rest of the game is just a bit of material around the joint, around the fleshy muscle, if you like. So it's just an aid to help you get going. And as the body warms up and the nervous system picks up what the body is doing, it should create itself for a good game of sports. You don't need strappings, only as a precaution. You should get rid of them as soon as possible. I'm going to say walking sticks. If you've got injuries for 2 or 3 days, you think of them as walking aids, so as to make the body walk properly, heel toe, realign the injury, rather than going hobbling up to the pub or club at night. Hospitals now will not put tuba grip on you when you come out of A&E on a Saturday night, because they say if you've got pain, you'll rest at home. If we give you tuba grip and walking aids, you'll go up the pub or club instead of resting at home.
Never knew that. Never knew
The other one, obviously, I go into lots of dressing rooms and you see the old...
The high caffeine drinks.
The high caffeine. Back about 5 years ago, I don't know where it came from, but suddenly somebody started telling referees that a good cup of coffee before a game was better than tea.
Right.
So you very often saw the referee's room having black coffee, plenty of sugar. And what basically happens in sport is that caffeine will give you a boost. It will help you keep alert. When we're driving, we'll have coffee, help us keep alert, stop the tiredness coming in. But as far as running goes, you are losing fluid during a game, and you can lose 3, 4, 5, 6 pints of fluid depending on how much you run and the weather. So if you lose a lot of fluid during the game, the body cannot lose this high caffeine. So it actually dehydrates the muscles and it tightens the muscles as the game goes on. So it's okay for a quick burst for the 100-yard runner, but the man who's running quite a few miles in a game, then it's not good for them. Too much caffeine, not just built up on the match day, the few days before, we're coming back to those litres of water grazing to neutralise the body and get it ready to just run, run and run.
From grassroots to the World Cup.
This is the Referee's World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Dave, finally, and we're going to talk about boots, and in particular, blades. The boots called blades. Dave, what's your view on these?
Not any particular make. It's the shape of the stud, which is elliptical. And 2 or 3 years ago, I had a lot of referees assistants who were coming with calf muscles problems. And if you particularly take the referee's assistant, we still love to call them linos to wind them up from the box, but referee's assistant, they're crabbing sideways.
Too much, is that
too
what you
much.
Said? Too much,
yeah. And if you imagine crabbing sideways against the width of a bladed stud, the elliptical stud, rather than the round one, you're putting a lot more work into the joints, the ankles, the calves, the knee joints. You're putting a lot more pressure through wearing a bladed type stud rather than a round stud or a Maltese stud, depending on the ground you've got to run up and down. And a referee, a player, and particularly youngsters under the age of 16, that if you've got somebody very active and the ground conditions are such that the blades stick in the ground because they are designed to give you grip. And if they do grip and somebody hits you and you rotate the joint, you'll do a lot more damage.
The boot doesn't turn.
The boot doesn't turn. So what we say with blades is there is no more injuries because of blades, but they are worse injuries because of blades. The extent of the injury is that much greater.
Because the boot doesn't turn or the foot doesn't turn.
Foot doesn't turn. Mm. And if you imagine where you are, striding sideways on is a referee's assistant, then you are working against all that extra angle of blade, so therefore it's not so good for you. And I always used to remind lines people as well that from where I sat in the box behind them, at one stage they used to get up in a position ready to go off. So in other words, they're up on their toes, tightening the calves, waiting for a goalkeeper to take his kick and then turn and run up the pitch. They need to be ready to move, but they don't need to get up onto their toes too early. It just tightens the calves all the time.
Final comment from Dave.
Final comment, enjoy your sport and get fit to play your sport. Don't play your sport to get fit.
The download is complete.